Mr. Lippman?
Elaine?
I was wondering if you got a chance to look at that biography of Columbus I gave you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Green, this water is still too cold.
Oh, yeah. It's freezing. Hurts your teeth.
Hello and welcome to The Place to Be, a Seinfeld podcast. I'm your host, Adam.
And I'm Eric.
On today's episode, we welcome Harris Shore. Harris has appeared in a number of films and TV shows, including Knots Landing, Wings, Party of Five, Chicago Hope, Weeds, ER, Caroline in the City, and Wayne's World. But Seinfeld fans will always remember him for playing the original Mr. Lippman in the classic season 3 episode, The Library, and we're so glad he can join us today. Thank you for being with us, Harris.
It's a pleasure to be here, Eric. I mean, Adam. Adam and Eric.
Yeah. Well, the pleasure is all ours. We really can't wait to talk to you because we just love what you did with Mr. Lippman, how you got the ball rolling with the character, and we can't wait to hear you talk about it. So can you tell us how the role on Seinfeld first came about and what the audition was like for it?
Yes, well, I had just gotten to Los Angeles from New York. I think that was like maybe my second or third job out here. I came out in the spring of 89 permanently. And that was a few years later. But just getting my traction and getting representation, and wound up studying with Larry Moss for a while out here, wonderful teacher and coach. And I had a great manager. What a nice guy and a sharp guy, Jeff Ross. And Jeff said, well, I have this audition for you for this, you know, the greatest show going right now. So I went, let's go for it. So he was there with me at the audition. I guess I'm supposed to remember if Larry David was there. I can almost bet you he was. But what I think is going to be most fascinating to you is that the audition scene was like 2 full pages. And as you know, the scene was edited down to maybe 4 or 5 lines for Mr. Lippman. And so whatever I did in that audition with a considerable text and dialogue, they liked enough, and I got the part. And of course, I was thrilled knowing that it could be recurring. And I got on set and things were going well. And then I'll never forget it. I was to make an entrance, which ultimately you saw done fine. But I grabbed a hold of a doorknob on a fake door. And I'm shaking the door. And, you know, a lot of us actors will tell you, we talk about rear view mirror chat after we do an audition. And I'm driving home afterwards, which ultimately became a successful shoot within itself, I think. No one complained about it. And I'm going, what if you had yelled, Louise, I'm in the closet. And she could have said, Mr. Lippman's in the closet. You know. So, I mean, you know, this is all hindsight and what ifs. But as you know, the wonderful Richard Fancy took over the role, and I never found out why. And it was disappointing. I would be numb with no feeling if I didn't tell you otherwise. And having just gotten out here, I probably took it more personally than a more seasoned L.A. actor would have taken it. I mean, I did mostly theater, live theater, industrial shows in New York. And although I guessed it on every soap opera, I mean, the Guiding Light, every time I'd fly back when I was working on both coasts, may she rest in peace, Betty. Betty's last name will come to me. Would book me in a guest spot on Guiding Light and other soaps. So I mean, the TV world out here was something I was getting used to, and not to make any excuses, but that's just what happened.
And just going back to your audition for a second, you mentioned that originally your scene was 2 full pages long. So do you remember what the rest of that scene was about?
No, I don't, but I can almost assure you it was in the same ilk, you know, coming into the office. And, I read the details and made some choices as an actor as to who I was and what I was doing and what she did or did not mean to me. And we just did what we did.
And this episode was fairly early in the show's run, so can you describe what the overall vibe was like on the set during your time there?
Well, it was just the most wonderful, exciting vibe of everybody so happy to be, you know, creating this new world, you know, and I just felt this effervescence of energy and life on the Seinfeld set. It was a wonderful feeling, just incredible feeling.
And once you started rehearsing your scene, what was your experience like working with Julia?
Well, she's just this very wonderfully comedic-centered, great listener, her timing, impeccable. I'm telling you things you already know about her, but I experienced it right there in the moment, you know. I'm fine with what I chose to do. You know, I was in my own world of notes and basically ignored her, which I don't know. Maybe I could have found, not that I'm doing hindsight to change what I did, but I would love to have had a scene where I'm like nose to nose with her and we're, you know, like that. But I didn't choose that. I chose something else and I'm fine with it. But boy, what a treat to be able to work with her again. That would be amazing.
So you just said that you wish you could have had a scene where you were like nose to nose with her, which wasn't how you decided to play it in that scene. Instead, you kind of look off into the distance and you don't really make eye contact with her. So what made you decide to play the character that way?
I just saw the character as a very aloof kind of maybe smarmy, actually, ultimately. But for the time being, I thought about what a bother for Louise to be annoying me with her writing. I mean, yeah, I'll get to it, but I got other notes. I got other things. I got calls to make. I have things to do, and I'll get to it, you know. And then I asked them to fix the temperature in the water. They didn't do it. I mean, what kind of an office am I running here anyway? You know, they say there are no small parts, just small actors. And of course, I make a joke about that. There are no small parts, just small paychecks. But anyway, but I was blessed to have that much and raised in New York, theatrical community, came into it kind of late. You may know if you read anything about me. I come mostly from a live performance musical background. And so, you know, I had started to study acting with Michael Howard back in New York of blessed memory and just sort of put it all together. And whoever I am as an actor now is based on all the great people I've known, as much or more than whatever talent I have.
And speaking of your musical background, did you ever get to perform with Jason Alexander during your time in New York?
No, I had never worked with Jason Alexander. I did a lot of New York theater. Yes, I do have a few Broadway credits. They were actually kind of early on. And I was set to star in something at the Princess Theater, and we never opened. That was Earthlings by Earl Wilson Jr. You may know of his father, who was one of the great columnists, newspapermen in New York. And we never opened. And so other than that, I would job out, whether it was for commercials or for a live show. I mean, back then the industrial shows were like full staged Broadway shows. I did a McDonald's industrial, traveled 8 cities back in my traveling days. And that was booking music and everything. And I worked with some wonderful, talented people. Some you may know and some you may not.
And getting back to your scene on Seinfeld, do you remember what Larry David was like as a showrunner and also what Joshua White was like as a director? Because I believe this was the only episode he directed for Seinfeld.
Well, I just only remember good things about everyone. Larry did have me in later to read for Curb Your Enthusiasm when they were just starting. Did not get that job, but he did have me back in, which was nice. And I want to give you answers to, you know, make this informative and exciting for you. But I just know that it was a very, very welcoming cast. Everybody was just terrific. The guy that played the detective, what a brilliant actor. May he rest in peace. And his name isn't on my fingertips.
Philip Baker Hall.
Yes, Philip Baker Hall. When I saw his performance, and now remember, I didn't see it while I was filming. But when I saw the finished product and the way he leaped off the screen, I went, "Holy smokes! This guy has more than the goods," you know. And but I've always been a Seinfeld fan. And it was a nice early beginnings of my work here. And I'll remember it fondly, always. It was a great show.
Absolutely. Oh, so you weren't on the set for any of Philip Baker Hall's scenes?
No, they the way they set that up, and they were very organized, of course. I guess they did my scene in the morning or his scenes in the morning and mine in the afternoon. I didn't meet Jason. It was pretty much Julia and the gal who played the secretary and I and the director. And that was the moment. And that was the shoot.
Was Jerry there?
No, I didn't see Jerry. I never met Jerry. Oh, you know, wow. I mean, I know you. I know you've interviewed Richard, and you know, he had much more of a span where he, you know, he met everybody playing Mr. Lippman. So it's a very strange feeling. Yeah, he and I have spoken and mentioned that we share the same name, but. But he did a great job with the role, and I've watched him on more than a couple of the episodes. So he would have had and did have an opportunity to meet just about everybody, I imagine. But when, you know, on my first episode, my scene, I was pretty isolated. It was great to have that as an early beginning in the other work I've done out here.
Yeah, that's interesting that they filmed the episode that way, because we hear that a lot in the later seasons. But I feel like in the earlier seasons, there weren't as many sets and they shot a lot of their stuff in front of the studio audience. But it sounds like for this episode, they shot a lot of their scenes at different times.
Oh, yeah, we were not. I would certainly remember being in front of a studio audience. But I remember the thing that sticks out the most is my absolute panic when I grabbed that doorknob. And the door didn't move. And I went, there goes your career. There goes your life. Sayonara, baby. But it wasn't as bad as at the moment. It was awful. But, you know, yeah. I survived and I've done okay. So.
Wait, so what exactly happened? The door fell off the hinge?
No. The way that was structured, the set piece, the flat, as it were called, as it's called, had another door that was not my entrance door. So, and I tell you, I probably did 100 plays in New York, and I never missed an entrance. And here I am in L.A., my big break on Seinfeld, and I grabbed this doorknob feeling sure it's the right doorknob, and it didn't budge. And I went, oh, my God. Cut! Cut! Sorry, Josh. I grabbed the wrong doorknob. How do you survive that? No. So that's boom. But we did it, and I, you know, got it together and played the scene. And it's funny how many people have contacted me about that scene, that they like it, and I think it's good. It's fine. But
yeah, well, it's also a very memorable scene because it's Mr. Lippman, but it's the original Mr. Lippman. Same with John Randolph, who played the original Frank Costanza. So it's just interesting watching those scenes and trying to picture what it would have been like if those actors played those characters.
Now, who is John Randolph again?
He played the original Frank Costanza.
Oh, he played, gosh.
So before Jerry Stiller came in, he was in an episode that they filmed, and he played Frank Costanza in the handicap spot.
The father,
yeah. So what happened was after they got Jerry Stiller, though, they went back and refilmed the scene. So both exist. So there's both versions that exist out there. With George's dad being played by John Randolph and Jerry Stiller.
I didn't know that happened to another actor. I don't feel so bad now.
Oh, no, there's also,
you know, the first actor could have gotten another job. Could have, you know, so various things, you know, various things happen. But I don't know, and it doesn't matter at this point in my life. But it was a great show to do. So I'm grateful I got the one episode.
And we talked about her a little bit already, but Maria Barrientos, who played the secretary, was also in that scene with you. So do you have any memories of working with her?
She was funny. She had this dry kind of delivery, which, like, now I thought she made a great choice because she was like, seemed like so bored with the job as the secretary. And like, you know, it was like, she was very good. I mean, again, not a big part, but I thought she was very good. She just, I tell you what I do remember. Once we had to do it over again, they were commending her because she was able to do it again and do it fine. And telling her how hard it is to come back in and do the same thing again. So I remember them boosting her up, which I thought was very nice and right thing to do.
Yeah, she was great. And we love small roles like that. You know, she was perfect. I'd love to talk to her someday, too.
Yeah. Very dry. I just loved the way she was so, like, bored with her job. Like, I can't wait. Please fire me, you know. Please, I want to go find another job. Please just, I don't want to work in this office anymore. Or she had a tough night the night before. I don't know. But she, whatever she did, I thought she was exceptional.
I know. And then there's Elaine just, they're complaining to her about, you know, not getting lunch. She couldn't care less about what Elaine has to say. I don't know anything.
Exactly. I felt everyone was a pleasure. I mean, I have nothing to say, but glad I did it. You know, that's.
Yeah. And you said that you didn't really know why they ultimately decided to go in another direction with the character, but you did mention that you saw a couple of the other episodes with Richard Fancy playing the role. So I'm curious, what is it like for you watching that? I mean, I know his performance was great, but like, do you try to picture yourself in those scenes? Are you evaluating his performance and saying, oh, I would have done it this way or that way? Like, what's going through your head?
Geez, what a good question. Well, first of all, as a human being, it kind of hurts that I wasn't asked to continue. On the other hand, I look at Richard and I go, that's really good. That's really good. So, you know, both of those feelings. And but to answer your question, I don't. Maybe it's run across my mind fleetingly. I wouldn't have done it that way, or I really like the way he did that, or, oh, I see what he's doing. Yeah, he's really underplaying that. You know, I guess because I'm an actor, I analyze in addition to just enjoying. But with that part, you're right, because that's the part that I'm sure I'm critical of it, not in necessarily a negative way, but just in an analytical way. And on the one hand, I feel like it was a missed opportunity. And on the other hand, I've had other opportunities. So I do embrace the one door closing, one door opening. or you say, well, when one door closes, another door closes too. But, you know, but it just depends on how dark you want to go. I love dark. So anyway, yeah, I look at it and I go, I get it.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of work, Richard.
Yeah.
My background. I mean, I didn't come out here and start working until I was in my mid 40s. So, but I did work a lot in New York. And but there are other people that start late, and everybody goes differently depending on their talent, their relationships, their castability. There's so many factors, and you can't really. People who try to give you an absolute recipe for success, there are lots of recipes, or there's no recipe.
Yeah. And getting back to your audition for Curb, I'm just curious, do you remember what character you auditioned for?
Oh, nah. No. No, I what I loved was the improvisational space that Larry gave me and has given others in the audition process. That I remember. That I enjoyed. I remember that.
You prefer that to a script?
Well, I just think that it's like we all start with a script. And we're taught to, like, you know, analyze a script and learn the words word for word. Don't make up your own words to sort of make it sound casual. And the writer wrote it for a reason. And then you get all that and you do all that. You have all that if you need that. And then a good director will go, okay, now just stick with the words when you want to. And if you need to go off and see what happens. You know, it's funny. I recurred with Bill Devane in Knott's Landing, and it was another early job here. And like I was taught, you know, you get a cue and then you talk. That's what you do. And I very respectfully said, Bill, what's my cue? And he said, when I stop talking, that's your cue. So I never forgot that. And so I waited till he stopped talking and I spoke and it made sense. If I had to change a word, if he changed, so I just changed it. I can do that. And most of the actors I know can do that. So that was a fun moment. I enjoyed that job too. And there's some jobs that stick out, some roles that stick out among the things I've done that I really, really felt like this is why I'm an actor. This is fun. This is fun. I mean, I can tell you about a couple of things I've done that I thought were especially fun. I mean, when I played Joe's doctor in Wings, I actually got seen for that because I was good friends with Rebecca Schull, who played the older woman in Wings. I forget her character's name. You remember the show?
I've never seen it. I know of it. Yeah.
I played his doctor, and I mean, every actor just loves to have something that's very doable in the scene, whether you're just looking at a person and doing it, or you literally have something physical to do and hold objects and work with objects and do what you need to do. And that was just so perfect. And I'm taking his blood pressure, and my father was a doctor, and I go, oh, Dad, would it, you know, it's all like very personal and to me, and got one of my best laughs that I've gotten on TV with that scene. And I just, it was just a nice shoot, really, a nice shoot. And I'm still out there, and without mentioning any names, I'm up for a new project. They've expressed interest in me, and we'll see what happens. And I do other things. I'm an ordained cantor. I'm a chazan, and might actually be doing that part time somewhere. I'm ready to go now that the actor strike is well over and the offices are getting busy. I know my agent is swamped, and all up for new beginnings.
Well, we definitely look forward to seeing you in those roles. And before we let you go, we're just going to move on to our final segment. It's called This, That, and the Other. So basically, we just ask you a question, and the first thing that comes to mind, you let us know. So first question, what is your favorite film?
Contemporarily, Whale. Reaching Back, Godfather 1.
Of course.
Nice. Favorite band or musician?
I would say, not to bore you, but the Beatles are beyond the depth of their work, people. And musician, Chris Botti comes to mind, the trumpeter.
Yeah.
Really phenomenal. He and Segovia on the guitar. There are many other fine guitarists whose names I can't produce for you right now, but he's at the top for a reason. I'll tell you who else. John Mayall's Blues Breakers. When I first saw them in college, I was truly awash internally with their whole feeling. And then I was living in the Hollywood Hills, and I'm walking my dog many years ago in the early to mid 90s up on Grandview Drive. And lo and behold, John Mayall was living up there, and his entire band was in his garage, and they were working out. And I did not want to finish that walk. I just wanted to sit there and take it all in and look at the view. That was a beautiful day.
That's awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you might have told us this one already, but what role or performance are you proudest of?
Well, let me put it to you this way. There are three things in my life that stand out from all the others. One is entertaining our troops in Vietnam during the war in a group I co-created called Four on the Town out of New York City. Number two, I have most recently, out of four times, sung our national anthem in Dodger Stadium. And the fourth time in 2019 was phenomenal. The feeling of giving that to a crowd of 50,000 people was wonderful. And the third thing is the birth of my daughter, which is really the first thing. As far as a role on television, I really think that role as Joe's doctor stood out for me as me doing some of my best work.
Most intimidating actor or director you've ever worked with?
I did a show called Beyond Belief with a wonderful actor named Ed O'Ross. And I'd actually remember doing a reading of a show called Lincoln Murder Trials in New York City decades before with him. And he's such a presence in a good way. And I'm sure there were others, but he was kind. But when you're working with Ed O'Ross, I mean, you're in the presence of a pretty fierce guy, talent. And he's this big guy with his boxer. He used to box. Sure, Ed, I'll go wherever you say. No. let me say my lines. but he's a nice guy, and he's a good-hearted guy, and he's a bull. You might have known him from Heavy Metal Jacket. And the other one is, he asked me for one, but may I give you a second one?
Sure.
I was blessed to be very close friends. He's one of my three best friends in New York City back in the old days, of a man named Alan Weeks. Not too many people know who Alan Weeks is, unfortunately. But he was the kid running down the street at the opening of The French Connection. And he has a couple of scenes in that film. He is an explosive dancer. Now, I had a soft shoe number with him. It's kind of funny. I mean, when I would dance with dancers, I'd smile a lot so they'd look at my face instead of my feet. And that's how I got by. But he's an explosive dancer and a powerful presence. He played the uncle in the Tap Dance Kid on Broadway. He has many, many, many Broadway credits. We lost Alan about 6 years ago. But I would say to be on stage with Alan, nobody means business more than Alan Weeks did. Wonderful, wonderful talent. And Gary Beach. I did a two-person show with Gary Beach. He was a very giving actor. I wish these guys were still on the planet, damn it. Gary Beach, who you may know from great successes on Broadway and on film, played the producer in The Producers on film. He and I did his two-character show for an industrial, and just the two of us. He had some singing and some language, and these were three substantial talents. But Alan was ferocious. In the best way.
Which type of characters do you enjoy playing the most?
What I've really enjoyed a couple of times in my career is researching a historical character to portray that character. That's something I really enjoy. I played Harry Truman in a musical called The Buck Stops Here. And, we toured and we wound up at the Smithsonian Institute for the 100th anniversary of Harry's birth. And I actually flew to Missouri to study Harry in the Harry Truman Museum. And it really paid off in terms of being able to create a moment in the play or two.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's that moment when he finds out that Roosevelt has died and that Harry has to take over the presidency and the panic in his eyes. That's on video. And then I wound up, I subsequently played Harry in a television series called The Korean War. So there you go. That's some of the stuff I've done.
It's really cool. What's an interesting fact people might not know about you?
I have swum from Malibu to Zuma 5 times. Ocean swimmer. I'm a certified water safety instructor and lifeguard. I've been down 100 feet under the ocean surface. Again, I've sung the national anthem 4 times in Dodger Stadium, was invited for the 5th, and it was the beginning of the awful COVID pandemic. And the other thing is, I'm a senior softballer, and I have a championship team from last season called the LA Codgers. And and we are tied for first place now going into the playoffs this season, and we'll see what happens. We have a game tomorrow. I guess there's other stuff about me that people might say, oh, really? But, you know, like I said, I'm an ordained cantor. I didn't really graduate from cantorial school till I was 62, I think. But I wanted to find something more spiritual to do. And it's not like I left acting. I just sort of wanted to expand my existence. And proud single dad of a 23-year-old daughter. I lead a pretty simple life. Not a big party guy. I'm a little party guy. And that's about it. I don't know what else to tell you.
That's great.
And final thing, favorite moment of your career?
This is just a gut. I haven't even thought about it, but it was that moment, that time when I was working with Gary Beach in that little show. And he was such a generous actor. He knew how to hold still for the other actor to get the laugh. And I think, not because I'm so funny, but because he's so generous, that I got one of the biggest laughs in my career. And getting laughs, genuinely good laughs, that feels so good. You like make all those people happy in one split second. Isn't that great? I mean, holy smokes, that's terrific. And Gary, and just to be in his presence was a gift, absolute gift. May he rest in peace.
Well, Harris, thank you so much for doing this. We've always wanted to talk to you. Everyone knows the actor who played the original Mr. Lippman on Seinfeld, and we thank you for sharing your story with us today.
My pleasure. Really, I'm just so happy you called me and contacted me, and looking forward to hearing finished version where you edit out all my snorts and whinnies and whistles and hiccups and keep all the good stuff.
Well, this was really great, and there was a lot of good stuff. So
we'll, good stuff.
Yeah, so thank you so much for coming on. Like we said, this was so great, and really appreciate that you got Mr. Lippman started for us in the series. And thanks for doing such a great job.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Eric. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Take care.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email us at theplacetobeseinfeld@gmail.com. You can also find our show on Facebook at The Place to Be, a Seinfeld podcast, Twitter at TPTBSeinfeld, and Instagram at theplacetobe.podcast. You can find our show on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, and Apple Podcasts. And if you'd like, please rate and review. It really helps us out. Until next time, be sure to hang up your pants for the perfect crease.
Oh, so I took your suggestion and I gave my boss Marion's poems, the ones that affected Kramer so much.
Oh, beautiful. Did he like them?
No, he didn't.